last episode in our Spring Tonic. We're calling this one Sing, and we're going to be seeking small ways to be happy. I'm Lisa Sykes, editor of The Simple Things, and I'm here listening to the birdsong with Bex Frank, our wellbeing editor. As promised, we won't actually be bursting into song today, you'll be pleased to know. Well, unless you're really feeling the joys of spring, Bex.
Well, I am feeling the joys of spring, but I won't put you through my bursting into song, thankfully.
Fair enough. But instead, we're going to be appreciating the dawn chorus, discovering why singing makes us feel good, remembering some childhood activities that make our hearts sing, cooing over new life, and discovering why friendships are so important to us. But first, a big thank you to Pause, the subscription box from mental health charity Mind, for supporting the whole season. Bex and I have very much enjoyed our origami activities in our first boxes. And each month for a donation, you receive a box of mindful things to do and think about. And your subscription supports Mind's work to help those struggling with mental health issues. So if that sounds of interest to you, you should find out more at pauseformind.org.uk/simple. And the link is also in our episode description. So Bex, here we are. Sing. Ways to be happy. I think birdsong is probably top of the list at this time of year. And if you get up early, you really can't fail to notice that it's spring because of it, can you?
It's incredible, isn't it? I was up actually just on a kind of quite functional, boring work walk down to the station very early at 5:30 in the morning a couple of weeks ago. And I couldn't believe, because there was no traffic, and I couldn't believe the sound of the birdsong. It was incredible. And instead of feeling, by the time I got to the station, I felt actually really happy and really calm instead of sort of stressed and annoyed for being up so early.
It's just uplifting, isn't it? The Swedes, of course, because they're good at this kind of thing, have invented a word, well, probably not invented it, just it's what they call it, gokotta, the act of getting up early to listen to birdsong.
I like that.
Isn't it brilliant that there's a word for that?
It's great.
I know. So I'm going to gokotta this morning. It sounds quite cool, doesn't it?
Set your alarm to gokotta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, setting your alarm at this time of year, it's not quite midsummer, so it's not too early, is it, really?
No.
You can, you know, get up at sort of, you know,
5:36 is incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've got into this annoying habit of waking up quite early, and instead of sort of lying there and thinking, oh no, this is going to be an awful day because I'm up so early, I, not every day, but have taken to getting up and just going and doing something nice and not laying there feeling depressed.
Very good.
And I've actually really enjoyed it. And I can hear the bird song and I can do something productive or something relaxing. And I feel quite proud of myself, actually.
No, you should be. But I think it's also because I'm really not enjoying the radio program I have that comes on with my alarm on the morning at the moment.
Ah, do you have the same program?
They've changed the DJ.
Right. Okay.
I don't like him. It's not kind of speaking to me. And I'm thinking it would be much nicer to listen to birdsong.
Mm. Have your window open.
The thing is, though, because there's sort of traffic outside, you can't always hear it. So, but I've discovered the RSPB, you have a bird song radio.
Oh, they do.
So if you can't hear the real thing, you can actually play it.
Play Radio Bird.
Yeah, Radio Bird.
How good are you at identifying, Lisa, identifying different bird song?
Oh, well, actually, the thing is, I do know, because in the dawn chorus, which is really nice at this time of year, it starts with a few calls.
It does, yeah.
And they are usually robins, yeah, blackbirds and thrushes.
Yeah, that's right.
And thrushes you will recognise because they're so beautiful, their song.
Yeah.
And so I would recognise those. And because you see the robin, it's quite easy to know which, you know, because they're always very visible, aren't they? It's quite easy to know. I'm not sure I'd recognise a blackbird offhand, though. How about you?
Well, I have been kind of trying to identify them. I feel like I really kind of know it. And I know it when I listen to them on my identifier, but then when I'm outside and they're all kind of going at it at once, I find it harder.
Yeah.
But the blackbird is lower, and I know the thrush as well, the song thrush, because it does repeat its song. That's so I can kind of identify that, but it isn't as easy as it seems.
But do you know what? I'm actually not that bothered about sort of knowing.
No.
I just kind of want to let it wash over me.
Yeah.
And I read, possibly in a piece that you wrote, Bex, is that birdsong can relieve stress and improve your mood in as little as 7 minutes, apparently.
Yeah. I mean, I think even less than that for me. It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, that's why, you know, there is Radio Bird and there are different apps where you can sit and listen to birdsong, because it is incredibly calming, relaxing.
Yeah.
A bit like listening to the sound of waves on the beach or something.
And apparently, if you are listening to this on the day we are releasing this episode, which is Sunday the 5th of May, today is actually National Dawn Chorus Day.
Oh, wow.
So if ever there were a reason to go out and listen to it. And of course, they do go on longer than dawn. Most birdsong goes well into the morning. It's only in the middle of the day where you get a real lull.
Mm.
And of course, if you're not that good at getting up in the morning, there's a dusk chorus as well.
Yes, there is.
Which is pretty much as spectacular. And again, it's the thrushes and the robins and the blackbirds that you'll probably hear last in the day as well.
Mm. Lovely for those evening walks.
Do you do dawn or dusk?
Well, I'm doing dawn quite a bit, but I do like a dusk walk as well, especially now we've got the lighter evenings. I like taking my dogs out in the evening. Both times of the day are really quiet, but I think I particularly like dawn because it gives you the opportunity to kind of set your mood for the day, I think. And that morning light, there's a lot of research into why getting out as early as you can in the morning and getting a dose of daylight helps to reset your circadian levels so that you, basically that's your kind of body's, your internal body clock. So your appetite, your sleep is all controlled by that. So it really kind of helps you to kind of keep in sync and find that it makes me feel more alert through the day. You can get to sleep a bit easier in the evening if you're someone that has trouble falling asleep. So there's lots of benefits to that.
And is that right that it actually makes you less tired if you've got up early? People who wake early feel more alert and less tired and go to sleep easier. So
yes, that's what the research shows.
That's a good reason, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think you notice that, don't you? I mean, it's lovely having a lie in, but you do, I don't ever feel like I quite get going if I've had a long lie in.
No. And I love that feeling. If you've got up early, you've done something and you look at your watch and you think, oh, it's only 10 o'clock and I've already done something really nice, you know, and I've still got the whole day ahead of me. Yeah.
There's have you heard about something called the 5 a.m. club? There was a book.
Sounds dodgy.
Yeah. I don't think I'll be going to be joining, but I'm in my own little 5 a.m. club at the moment.
Yeah.
But the premise of that, it was a book that was written by a guy called Robin Sharma. And there's a whole social media thing about people getting up at 5 a.m., hashtag 5 a.m. club. But he said that it's a good, you know, the nice thing to do is to create this hour for yourself when you wake up, and that allows you the time to do that before other people get up. And for time to do things like maybe a bit of movement, so that might be a walk, a bit of reflection, perhaps, you know, something that you don't get time for in your day, like filling in your journal or having a go at meditation, or maybe just, you know, then something, an opportunity to read something or listen to something like a podcast.
Yeah.
You could be listening to our podcast.
No, I often try and not sort of open my laptop and get stuck into work. I kind of like to think, okay, this is pre-work.
Yes.
And we've talked about this. This is 5 to 9, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you have 5 to 9 at the beginning of the day and 5 to 9 at the end of the day.
That's right.
And actually they're both, this time of year, you can make absolute benefits of both of those, can't you?
It's just great, isn't it? And that's what I love about this time of year. I love the morning, which we just talked about, but at the end of the day, so you can kind of mold your day around, obviously things, different jobs, different people will suit different times, but you have this sort of stretchy time. So, you know, at the end of the day, you've got the benefits of kind of going out again, and the fading light also has an effect on your hormone production. So it will help you to kind of calm down, produce melatonin, which is the sleep hormone. And it's a lovely time to hang out, isn't it? And just be...
Oh, yeah. You see, you're selling it to me. And I think, much as I do like an early morning,
yeah,
the dusk chorus, sitting, listening to birdsong in the evening, possibly a glass of something chilled in my hand.
Yeah.
By the fire pit, maybe.
Yeah.
We sometimes watch bats in our garden.
Oh, we do.
In fact, a few times we've wild camped in our garden to watch them at night. And, you know, just being in the sleeping bag laid on the lawn, it's kind of, I don't know, it's just a childish thing, but it's fun.
That's great fun. And it stays so much lighter when you're outside, because when you're inside, it feels like it's dark and you put the lights on. But when you're outside, you realize that it's not dark.
I know, you can still see, can't you? Yeah.
You can still see and you can hear the different sounds and smells. And they're saying that as the light fades, you know, you can't see as clearly, but your other senses heighten. So you can hear things and smell things.
Yeah.
And I like that idea too.
I know. And we don't spend enough time outside at dusk, do we? We kind of do come inside, you know, partly because of our climate, I guess, because it's not always that warm for sitting outside. But yeah, just yesterday, my other half, he likes doing a bit of photography and he likes wildlife photography. And for ages, he's been talking about going down the wood to watch the badgers. And yesterday he went down there and he just set off.
Did he catch them?
And yeah, and he saw some. And they
did he?
Yeah, and he was just walking along the path towards him, you know. And
did he get some good shots?
Well, to be honest, he didn't. But that's because it sort of took him by surprise that he appeared right in front of him. But actually, it didn't matter. You know, he just went out there and saw it. And actually, he was so pleased because he just hadn't got round to doing it, you know. Yeah. And actually, you've got to be in it to win it, haven't they, as they say?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, obviously, it's not only birds that like to sing in spring. We also get more vocal, don't we, as our energy levels and spirits rise. But I mean, I don't know, most people think they can't sing. I think I can't sing. You know, does it matter?
Yeah, I think most people think they can't sing, but most people actually, if they were really honest, do quite love singing, really, even if it's just on their own in the shower, don't you think?
Yeah, and also we do all actually sing, don't we? It might be the shower, it might be a football match, you know.
Yeah.
It might be in the car or when you're dancing. I sing all the time if I'm at a club. Mm. Like, when did I last do that? But, you know, at a party or a wedding or something.
No, everyone has certain songs that they can't resist singing along to, yeah.
Yeah.
And I like...
Go on.
No, as I was saying, I like it when, you're just in the kitchen and the radio comes on and there's a song, you just, you know, every word, and you just burst into song and, yeah.
Absolutely.
You don't really care who's listening, do you?
I know.
My son sings in the shower.
Does he? Is he tuneful?
It's just really sweet. Not especially, but it's just obviously like his time when, you know, he's kind of relaxed, and singing makes you feel good. So it's one of the kind of well-being activities that's really recommended for so many reasons. It has physical and emotional health benefits. So physical, you can imagine your lung function, but it's even been shown to improve immune function.
Yeah.
And then emotionally, it's great, brings people together, things like choirs and going to church.
And it must be the old endorphins again, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. And oxytocin, which is the bonding, when you're often singing in a group. And it really helps you to calm down.
Apparently more than 2 million of us sing in communal groups now.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great, isn't it?
I know.
I mean, we did a piece on this, didn't we? And I loved, yeah. There was a sound of there was a group of mums that had come together that were singing. And I think they weren't actually even meeting in person, but they were kind of singing online. And they're this is a new mums as a way of kind of relieving stress and maybe singing lullabies. And I just thought it was a lovely idea.
It's a really good idea. I'm not sure I'd feel about doing it online though. It's something about standing next to someone. I think in my own head, that's what keeps me in tune.
Yeah.
Being next to someone who can actually sing, you know.
Yes.
But yeah, and also that whole breathing thing as well, because you have to breathe deep when you're singing, don't you?
Yeah. And look what you just did when you said that.
Yeah.
You just went, you kind of straightened up and puffed out your chest. And that's another thing. Singing is good for your posture as well, because you don't stand and sing.
I didn't really thought about that, but yeah, you stand up, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, no, it's very true. So what about humming though? Because, you know, you sing it, I'll hum it. I mean, humming seems a lot easier than singing.
Humming is really good for you. Humming, and think it, so you can hum a tune, and also you can just do the kind of humming like in a, you know, like a chanting, like an kind of hum.
Yeah.
And that's very good for calming down the nervous system.
Is that why they do that in yoga then? Is that why it's part of that?
Yeah.
Practice.
So it stimulates the vagus nerve.
Okay.
Yeah, it stimulates the vagus nerve, which singing also does.
Where's your vagus nerve?
So it's the nerve that kind of connects to this sort of emotional center of the brain. So it's all involved in the parasympathetic nervous system. So it's all a bit technical. It's basically your kind of calm, switching off the sort of stress response and switching on your calm, relaxed mode.
So I guess it's that vibration, isn't it,
yes,
that happens
exactly.
Inside your body. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really interesting how it... having something happen in your body can affect other parts of your body, doesn't it? My dentist gave me a really good tip about if you want to take your mind off something, you know, like because they're fiddling around in your mouth and it's not the most pleasant experience.
Yeah.
If you wriggle your toes, it takes your head to the other end of your body. So actually totally take, and it works so brilliantly.
Ah, That's so clever.
Top tip for the dentist chair there.
Yeah.
But I guess that's the thing with singing as well, isn't it? It kind of takes your mind off other things that might be aching or paining or whatever.
Yeah. And you're in the moment, aren't you? And you can't, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, your mind's not going to be wandering off. And yeah, I used to do like a little bit of singing in a choir.
Did you?
A school choir. It was a parents and kids when my kids were in primary school.
Yeah.
And I used to love it. It was on a Monday morning and it kind of really cheered me up on a, you know, Monday. And
oh, I bet.
We all felt, you know, it's really nice singing with all the kids as well. So it's something I do think about.
Well, it's worth reminding everyone that we publish a playlist in every issue of the mag.
That's right.
And yeah, our deputy editor Frances compiles them, but I think they're some of the most animated conversations we ever have as a team, aren't they, when we all contribute ideas to the playlist.
Yeah.
Then there's a bit of scathing sort of suggestions and other ones are like, oh yeah.
Yeah, and all the different music tastes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that we always Frances always seems to come together, bring together this great playlist that, you know, I often listen to them and have them on in the car and, you know, I'll know most of them and they're really good sing-alongs.
Definitely.
As well.
The best road trips though with the kids are when you're singing ABBA in the car. It is really hard to beat a good ABBA song.
Yeah.
Well, it's time to take a break now.
Great.
We're going to pop the kettle on and or perhaps even take it outside if it's sunny. We publish an original short story in every issue of the magazine, and the story I've chosen for this episode is about understanding and appreciating what makes other people happy. Happiness Is, a short story by Anne Youngson. All I could hear was the clicking of Aunt Louisa's false teeth above the noise of the cafe. She had eaten every cake from the three-tiered stand in front of us and was looking at something behind my right shoulder, absent-mindedly tapping her upper against her lower set. Her boucle jacket was too tight, the material straining between the buttonholes to form the shape of the mouth from Edward Munch's The Scream. The rest of her was as unlike the figure in the painting as it was possible to be. Aunt Lois had always been both contented and fat. It was looking at her that I learnt the importance of controlling my weight. "She likes her food, don't begrudge it to her," my mother said when I complained about having to watch her eat. In the cafe, I became aware that my aunt was sighing, eyes still staring into the room behind me. I did not look round. Already the sight of her unnatural pearly teeth sinking into her éclair and then my éclair, into her fondant fancy, my fondant fancy, had made me feel slightly sick. Aunt Lois had never married. Couldn't lift her head out of the trough long enough to make a conversation, my father said. But she had a talent, a mysterious talent for numbers, particularly those with pound signs in front of them. She had started with a job in the city doing something too dull to be discussed, and then a bigger job. Then, strangely, it seemed she owned the firm. She was now as rich as she was fat, and the family had stopped patronising her and started trying to make her happy. "Easy," said my father. "Take her out to tea." And here I was, watching her and thinking, if I didn't care about being thin, I could take pleasure in eating, have at least 3 hits of joy in every 24 hours, if only I never had to look in a mirror. Aunt Lois's eyes were still fixed on something I could not see. Maybe, I thought, she was looking at the food on someone else's plate, something unique and exquisite, even now being put into someone else's mouth and making her salivate. I looked round. There was nothing to see except more tables, the same cakes. "What were you looking at?" I asked. "Not looking at, dear. Thinking about. I was thinking about my rhodohypoxis." All I knew about Aunt Lois was that she worked with figures and loved food. I attempted to fit this unfamiliar word into one of these 2 categories. "Does it taste nice?" I asked. She smiled and swiped her napkin over the cake crumbs clinging to her knobbly jacket. "No," she said, "you don't eat it. You care for it, nurture it, and if you're lucky, it rewards you with flowers. When it flowers, it is beautiful. And beauty is like food. It makes me happy." As she wrote down the name of this unfamiliar plant for me, she added, "And I believe in being happy." I looked up rhodohypoxis. She was right. It is beautiful. I looked Aunt Lois up too and found she was as well known to total strangers for her expertise in alpine plants as she was to us for her love of food. I think I may have more to learn from my fat but contented Aunt Lois. I may have been looking in the wrong direction, putting the wrong things on the scales. So there are lots of ways to take a moment in your day, and reading or listening to a story is one of them. But you might also like to try Pause, which is the subscription box from Mind that arrives in your letterbox with a mindful activity each month. Now, Bex and I really enjoyed the origami we got in our first one, and I'm never at my most deft with my fingers, but it is very satisfying to follow an expert's instructions and make something you've never done before. You can find out more about the Pause box at pauseformind.org.uk/simple, and the link is also in our app description. So as you've realised, Bex and I are discussing things that make your heart sing today, and we both agree that looking back to what we enjoyed as children gives you a good clue to what will still appeal now. Isn't that right, Bex?
Yeah, that's right. And it's funny you should mention that in the origami, because I used to love doing things like that when I was a child, and it really did remind me of that while I was doing it. I used to buy, you know, those kind of special books and magazines that had kind of projects like that in them, and it was just all the kind of pretty patterns and the paper. I thought I really, handling the paper was really nice. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's really tactile, isn't it? And drawing and colouring and all that.
Yes, exactly.
But, you know, then outdoor things. I mean, I was never indoors from spring through to autumn. It felt
same
when I remember my childhood.
Yeah. Lots of my kind of most kind of happiest, most things that I can really kind of visualise and smell the smells and hear the sounds when I was outside and, you know, probably in the Peak District with my family, paddling barefoot, never had any shoes on, you know, straight into the streams, icy cold, but it didn't matter, climbing trees, swimming in the sea, you know, it was just great fun.
Oh yeah, I know. And I just that thing about being barefoot, it's so you can give it words like grounding and sensory and all that stuff, but actually you just did it as a kid without even thinking about it because it felt good.
Yeah.
And now I'm quite self-conscious about it now.
Yeah.
You know?
I know. I do it in the garden a little bit more now. I mean, it has to be kind of dry-ish, to be honest, but it does feel really nice to feel the grass and cold, you know, beneath your feet, doesn't it?
Yeah. I know.
And not care about the dirt.
In fact, I'm definitely going to do more of that this summer. It's time to get the shoes off, I think.
Yeah. And what about you, Lisa? what would be the things that you...
Well, I mean, you know, all like you've said, running down sand dunes, running down hills, all those sort of adventurous things. But, you know, things like I've talked about before. So, you know, I did lots of dancing as a child. I did a lot of ballet and jazz and tap. And
yes, of course.
And, you know, it really was more than a hobby. It was just kind of our way of life. You know, we did it several times a week. We did competitions and ballet exams and shows and all that. But actually, I've taken in ballet up again as an adult. And actually, ballet was never my favourite thing as a kid. You know, it was a bit boring compared to doing like jazz and stuff.
Yeah.
But actually now, ballet, I'm better at it now because I'm more precise with my body and just finding the positions. And, you know, it's really stilling and it's really calming, but also really intense concentration. So I really get a lot out of it now.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's something from my childhood.
It's such a great form of exercise.
Yeah, that's come through. Mm. And bike rides, of course. Bike rides are always still great, aren't they? But I know we've talked about those before. But what about climbing trees, though?
Oh, yes, definitely.
I used to climb trees all the time.
Me too.
I mean, my mum was always telling me off because I'd rip my trousers on things and I'd, you know, I just would never be. And I did it with my kids when they were small.
Yeah.
Because they really love it
if
you get into the tree as well.
They want you to join in, don't they?
Because they don't expect it, do they? But you know what, I'm not sure I could actually climb a tree now. I had to climb on a high stool for something the other day, and I actually got a little bit stuck because my legs just wouldn't push me all the way up.
Did you? Yeah.
And I was so embarrassed, even though it was just me in the kitchen by myself. And it makes you realize how much strength you lose, though.
Yeah, which is probably a good reason to do it.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I mean, you don't have to climb a tree, but there is something really nice about getting up high, isn't there?
Oh, definitely.
So, and getting a different perspective. So one of my, you know, I was talking about earlier, the early morning thing. The thing that actually inspired me with the early morning was a walk that I did up to a top of Salisbury Hill, which is near where I live.
Oh.
And it was just, it was incredible to kind of be up there. It's not a huge hill. It didn't take, very long time. It's probably like a, you know, 5K in total round walk.
And this was at sunrise, was it?
It was at sunrise, yeah. And then we had this incredible vista, this 360-degree vista of the city and the surrounds. But it just made me think about, when we've written about this before, haven't we, about how, you know, being up high, I mean, we like it, don't we, like seeing sunrises and sunsets, and it does give you kind of a different perspective on things, helps clear the mind.
Well, it's that thing that It's that thing about letting your eyes roam as well, isn't it?
Yes.
You know, the tyranny of devices means we all spend so much time looking down.
Yeah, exactly.
And I read something, again, I think it was a piece in our magazine. We're just full of good advice, aren't we? and it was saying that one way to kind of reset your brain from looking down and you use your eyes differently. So if you walk backwards and look up as you walk backwards, it slows down all your coordination and improves your balance and posture.
Mm.
But also gives you a totally different perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And like when you go to an art gallery,
you're looking up
and you let your eye roam across canvases.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess stargazing, that's, you know, it's that whole making space for awe thing, isn't it? You know,
yes.
But not focusing on one constellation, but on the whole vista. And then, of course, you contemplate, you know, what it is to be part of a big universe and all that stuff, don't you?
You can't really help but do that, can you?
No.
And then, like cloud spotting as well. I like that.
Oh yeah.
So you'd be laying down on the grass or on a rug and just letting yourself find shapes in the clouds and just watching them sort of drift by.
Oh, definitely. Those things like cloud spotting and you know, they're actually proven ways to make you happy. Because a few years ago, do you remember we produced these sew-on patches, and they were called happiness patches, and they were things like, you know, climb a hill,
yes,
make a campfire, watch clouds, and but we based them on some actual research that the New Economics Foundation, a think tank, had done this research about everyday actions and how you can improve your well-being but also be happy. And funny enough, actually, Mind based their pause subscription box idea on exactly the same research.
Yeah.
And they're essentially five things that make you happy. And I keep these a little list, actually, because sometimes if, you know, you feel a bit imbalanced in your life and you think, I need to do more of X or less of whatever. And they're just really good little guidelines. So one is be active, which basically to me means get outdoors. And I think that's number one. And the second one is take notice.
Mm.
And that's be curious. And that's looking up. We have talked about curious.
Yeah, well, we've talked about that quite a lot, haven't we?
Our curious episode is still available to download if anybody hasn't listened to it.
Yeah.
And I'm watching clouds. And then keep learning, which is something we do a lot in the magazine, isn't it? Trying something new. Never stopping learning, really. I think, you know.
Yes, yeah.
It's important.
Yeah. I love our Know a Thing or Two series for that.
Yes.
And that, you know, just picking a subject and
diving deep.
Delving into it and just diving deep into it. Yeah.
Definitely. And the last one, the fourth one is be kind. So doing something else for someone else, you know, doing something nice,
mm-hmm.
joining a group, volunteer, giving. And that whole thing, and again, we talked about this, about looking out as well as in and why it's so important for you.
Yes. Yeah.
And the last one is connect, which of course is, you know, about gathering your friends and investing in your relationships, which is so important, isn't it?
It is. I don't think there's anything really that you can think about, I can think about, that makes my heart sing as much as seeing some really good friends or a really good friend. Can you?
No, it is just so tangible. You know, you just come home feeling lighter and brighter, and the world is a better place, didn't you, when you've seen a good friend and you've had a great catch up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And there is a lot of research into the importance of our friendships and these connections in our health and our longevity. You know, the blue zones, the areas of the world where they're studying, where people are living to be longer and their health and...
Oh, interesting. I didn't know they were called that. Yeah.
Yeah, longer, healthier lives and, you know, a higher percentage of octogenarians than in other areas.
Mm-hmm.
And they have found, you know, there are several factors, but having a strong social support network is one of the main contributing factors, they think, to these...
Ah, yeah.
To these, to this longevity. And
so having good friends makes you live longer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It makes you happy, it makes you positive, gives you purpose. And I think the thing is that often, you know, like we were just saying about technology and stuff, great in many ways, and it is really good for connecting with people. But there is nothing quite like seeing someone in real life.
Yeah.
So you might feel like you're connecting with people because you're liking their pictures or you've responded to a message from them, but you don't really get the same well-being benefits as you do from seeing a friend in real life.
No, I think that's so true, isn't it? And, you know, there are lots of people that I keep in touch with online and I feel like I'm talking to them, but I'm not really talking to them.
Yeah.
But we've kind of lost the habit of phoning people, haven't we?
Yeah.
But actually getting out and actually seeing people is something that is even better than phoning someone, in my view.
I mean, a phone call is better than a message, but and if someone doesn't live near you, then a phone call is great. And you can have a really lovely chat over the phone. But making a plan or even just getting something in the diary, if it's not a friend that lives nearby to you. So I have a friend that I've recently reconnected with after we just kind of lost touch. And, I think neither of us really thought that the other one could really be bothered.
Yeah.
And then we bumped into each other and we had a really kind of honest conversation and both kind of admitted that we were really missing each other and had a really nice evening together. And since then we've been speaking regularly on the phone.
Oh, that's sweet.
Because we don't live in the same city.
Yeah.
And making plans to just to meet up more often. And it's actually made me feel really happy.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And things can founder, can't they? They can founder on things and misunderstandings. And, you know, until you see people. And also you've got those old friends, haven't you? That, you know, one of my oldest friends, she lives near where I grew up, so I don't live anywhere near her. And sometimes I might only see her twice a year. It's always within 10 minutes, like we were still 14, you know, and
nice.
And that's how it is. And and you just know it's always going to be like that.
Yeah.
But you do have to kind of make an effort, I think, because you can't just, if you never see someone, it doesn't work like that, does it?
No, not if you never see or never speak to someone. But then there are different friendships, of course. So there are also the friends that, you know, we might not have known for a long time and it might be a bit more sort of, you know, a shared bond, like you live in the same place or you do the same hobby or you have children the same age.
Yeah.
And they're really important friendships and connections as well.
Mm-hmm.
They do say, you know, it's good to have friends that provide you with different things. That sounds a bit strange, but, you know, and you probably wouldn't think of it like that.
Yeah.
But if you actually think about your friendships, you probably do have these people in your life anyway, you know, the friends that...
Yeah.
You know, the old friend that you can literally tell anything to and, you know, they won't judge you.
Yes.
Then, I don't know, maybe a friend that you kind of find quite motivating and inspiring.
Yeah.
Maybe is a bit more of a mentor.
Give you advice. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And
actually not always are all of those things delivered by one person, are they?
No.
Often you've got a small group of friends and you turn to different friends for different things, don't you?
Yeah, you probably do it without even realising it.
Yeah.
And then and also, obviously, it's just really nice to have play and do fun things with your friends, like the things we were saying about that's what you did as children, isn't it? That they were the things that made love, just hanging out and playing games and...
I know, hanging out where you just got together with no plan.
Yeah.
Did you? Well, now you tend to arrange things, don't you? You tend to,
yes.
Let's have a meal. Let's go and do something.
Or let's go and see this exhibition or see this film or, yeah.
Yeah. And instead, what we should be doing is just saying, oh, should we just go on a dog walk or do you fancy just meeting up or, you know?
Yeah, because it's just less of an effort, isn't it? And there doesn't have to be a specific reason. So you might wait for something when actually you could just say, oh, you know, or think just, I really like fancy, you know, having a chat with that friend. So I'll just give them a ring and maybe I'll go and drop them a message and maybe I'll join them on their dog walk today. And then you've just spent an hour chatting.
Yes. And it's those little things that kind of you squeeze out, don't you, of your busy life.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas, you know, the bigger events, you still make an effort to do.
Yeah. And you might feel that, you know, you need to cook a special meal or...
Yeah.
Or make a special effort. And then you might think, well, I've got a busy week. I haven't got time for that. Whereas if it's just, let's get takeaway pizza or something, then there's no effort from either of you, is there?
Definitely.
It doesn't matter if you've had a busy day.
I recently went away with three really old friends and we've been mates for like over 30 years, but we've never really spent that much time hanging out because we've always gone somewhere or done something. And we had this whole weekend and we didn't really make many plans and it was brilliant. I think we all really wanted to come back and do it again because it was so familiar, yet we'd never done it before.
Yeah.
And so relaxing.
I bet you never stopped talking, did you?
Oh, we came back hoarse, Bex. Honestly, I could barely speak. I didn't know I had that much talking.
That's such a lovely thing to do. Yeah. And like you said, because you were just somewhere very relaxed, you didn't have an itinerary.
Yeah.
You could just do whatever you felt like doing and sit out in the sunshine and talk to each other.
Oh, I'm feeling happier already.
Did you play any games?
Oh, we did play a few games, obviously. Yeah. But most of it was talk, to be fair.
Yeah.
But yes, anyway, takeaway from our chat today, it's do more things that make you happy, isn't it?
Yes.
Isn't that what we're saying, really? And we always set some intentions. We've got into the habit of doing this. I think it's really good. I am going to set the intention of planting everything I have.
Oh, wow.
Because I love things grow. It makes me really happy.
Yeah.
Things that I've planted. But I've got too many plants that I bought and just left sat in a pot or...
Oh, I do that all the time.
Yeah, and seeds that I haven't sown and bulbs that I haven't planted. So I'm just going to plant everything this weekend and then watch what happens.
Go for it. I hope it doesn't rain.
Oh, yeah. I'm out there, whatever. Yeah. How about you? What's your intention?
Well... Following on from my getting up early, I do really think it's affecting my mood and my energy levels in a great way. So I am going to get out of the house and go for a dawn walk once a week.
Oh, that is
while it's nice and light.
That is an intention.
Yeah, that's my intention. Yeah.
I'm going to check up with you on that bit.
Or if I can once a week.
Yeah, no, it's good though. It's nice. No pressure though. No pressure.
No pressure.
But on these happy notes, we're going to leave you hopefully with a few ideas of your own, perhaps for your own could-do list that will help you note and notice and enjoy spring now it's finally here. It's time to say goodbye for now to Bex.
Goodbye. Thanks again.
Thank you, Bex. And it's been a pleasure to hang out with Bex and Joe Tidsley in season 2. If you missed any of our episodes in our spring tonic selection, you can still download them from your podcast app. And don't forget to follow us so you'll be notified when the next season is ready to listen to. And on that subject, we're going to be back later in the summer with an R&R vibe. That's rest and recreation as opposed to rock and roll. But thank you so much for your support. If you enjoyed our podcast but you haven't tried the magazine yet, we've got a great subscription offer and the link is in our app description, or you can do it via our website, thesimplethings.com. And lastly, a big thank you and a final plug for Pause, the subscription box for mental health charity, which has supported this season. Remember, your donation sees you receive a monthly box of calming activities while supporting the charity's work. And you can find out more for the last time at pauseformind.org.uk/simple. Thanks very much for joining us and for listening. See you soon.
Bye.